Declaro abierta la cuarta sesión.
I call to order the fourth meeting of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Distinguished members of the forum, we shall now proceed to deal with agenda item 3, discussion on the special theme for the year, Indigenous Peoples, Development with Culture and Identity, Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This afternoon, the Permanent Forum will continue the segment of its work, which contains the three public dialogues on the special theme. Can we have some silence, please, so we can begin on time and have enough time for the dialogue, please? I was saying that this afternoon the Permanent Forum will continue the segment of its work, which contains the three public dialogues on the special theme. This afternoon, the Permanent Forum will hold dialogue with governments, and we have a very long list of speakers. The first on the list of speakers is Ambassador Francisco Carrion, who is permanent representative of Ecuador to the United Nations.
He should say again, Brazil, you have the floor.
Yeah. No está el representante.
Well, the permanent representative of Ecuador doesn't seem to be in the hall, and so we will give the floor to the representative of Brazil, Mr. Paulo Celso Oliveira, from the Brazilian National Foundation for Indigenous Issues.
Senhor Presidente,
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, Brazil thinks that the topic of development and identity is particularly important. The Brazilian Constitution expressly recognizes the social organization, the social indigenous organization, their customs, habits, beliefs, traditions, etc., as well as the original rights over the land which they hold traditionally. For Brazil, the first measure which should be adopted with respect to development with identity is protecting indigenous territories. Professor James Anaya says that our countries are moving forward with their demarcation. Indigenous lands represent 13% of the national territory, roughly 1,600,000 square kilometers, and they are inhabited by more than 220 peoples representing a great sociocultural diversity. On the 21st of December, President Lula, launching the third National Plan for Human Rights, announced the approval of another other indigenous lands located in the Amazon with an area of 5 million hectares where there are 7,000 indigenous peoples. This measure is a sign of the federal government's commitment to indigenous issues, as well as the commitment of our country to take concrete action in order to preserve the environment. Brazil, in this way, recognizes the importance of traditional occupation of indigenous peoples over their lands to maintain ecological balance, but also for future and present and future generations, but also the social promotion of indigenous peoples. Another thrust which Brazil considers important is the social promotion of indigenous peoples, which means carrying out an indigenous policy with indigenous peoples. In this way, we are aiming to promote the leadership of these peoples. Brazil has been guaranteeing indigenous participation in the definition of public policies, which should deal with their rights and interests. We note that in the area of education, indigenous peoples have made substantial progress. Currently, in my country, there are about 10,000 indigenous professors, and they represent more than 90% of teachers who give classes in indigenous lands, almost 2,500 indigenous schools, and roughly 175 students who are enrolled at the primary and secondary level. Schools have adopted intercultural policies, including their own learning processes. Roughly 2,000 indigenous persons are now enrolled in university, such as law, agronomy, anthropology, nursing, medicine, pedagogy, and many others. Their access to universities has been made possible through affirmative measures taken by the federal government, which created special spots in universities and which is also granting bursaries. We note as well that the country has been building, in, along with indigenous peoples, ethnic development to stimulus policies, considering that besides establishing borders, we have to offer suitable conditions for their sustainability. The sustainable development policy with identity is currently being developed and includes a dialogue between the government and indigenous peoples. We should point out that President Lula is always open to dialogue with all of the sectors of civil society who have free access to the Plan Alto Palace, where the Presidency of the Republic is located. Starting with this plan in 2006, we have developed a ongoing consultation mechanism with the indigenous peoples of the entire country, and this was achieved through the establishment of the National Indigenous Policy Commission. President Lula, on the 19th of April, the day of the Indian in Brazil, and the president of the CNPI, President Lula took part in the commemoration of the historical demarcation of those lands, confirmed by the Federal Supreme Court in 2009. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias a usted.
I'd like to thank you. We will now like to give the floor to the Ambassador Susan Rice, Permanent Representative of the United States to the United Nations. Ms. Rice, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, distinguished representatives of indigenous groups from around the world, excellencies, and distinguished delegates. In his presidential proclamation last fall, honoring Native American Heritage Month, President Obama recognized that, quote, the indigenous peoples of North America, the first Americans, have woven rich and diverse threads into the tapestry of our nation's heritage, unquote. What is true in the Americas is true around the world. There is no true history that does not take into account the story of indigenous populations, their proud traditions, their rich cultures, and their contributions to our shared heritage and identity. But in the United States and many other parts of the world, indigenous communities continue to feel the heavy hand of history. Our First Nations face serious challenges, disproportionate and dire poverty, unemployment, environmental degradation, health care gaps, violent crime, and bitter discrimination. Far more must be done at home and abroad to tackle these challenges, expand the circle of opportunity, and work with our Native communities to ensure they enjoy the security and dignity that all citizens deserve. President Obama is deeply committed to strengthening and building on government-to-government relationships among the United States and our tribal governments. Our administration has moved quickly to launch programs to improve the lives of Native Americans. Shortly after his inauguration, the President appointed my colleague, Kimberly Teehee, as his Native American policy advisor and began extensive outreach to tribal leaders. In November of last year, President Obama invited representatives from each of our 564 Indian tribes in the United States to attend a White House Tribal Nations Conference. Nearly 400 tribal leaders participated, the most widely attended White House tribal meeting with the President, Cabinet Secretaries, senior officials, and members of Congress in U.S. history. The President signed a memorandum on November 5, 2009, directing every federal agency to develop plans to implement fully his executive order on consultation and coordination with tribal governments, which mandates that all agencies have an accountable process for meaningful and timely input by tribal officials in the development of regulatory policies that have tribal implications. The level of tribal consultation is now at historic levels, marking a new era in the United States' relationship with tribal governments. Last month, President Obama signed a historic reform of the U.S. healthcare system that includes important provisions to reduce the gaping healthcare disparities that Native Americans still face. Signing and implementing this landmark law constitutes a major step towards fulfilling our national responsibility to provide high-quality, affordable health care to all citizens, including American Indians and Alaska Natives. The U.S. government has also made improving public safety in tribal communities a high priority. The Department of Justice supports an initiative to hire more Indian Country assistant U.S. attorneys to prosecute cases of violent crime on Native lands. This initiative will also provide additional federal agents to support law enforcement efforts in tribal communities. Combating crimes involving violence against women and children on Native lands is a particularly high priority for the U.S. government. Last year, in the face of a global economic crisis, President Obama took swift action to spur economic activity and create new jobs. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act specifically allocates more than $3 billion to assist tribal communities. These funds are being used to renovate schools on reservations across the country, to create new jobs in tribal economies, improve housing, support health care facilities, and bolster policing services. The President's fiscal year 2011 budget request also proposes a 5% increase in federal funding for Native American programs to a total of $18.5 billion. The United States also supports programs that help indigenous communities around the world. We are especially committed to promoting corporate social responsibility, particularly with extractive industries whose operations can so dramatically affect the living conditions of indigenous peoples. The United States is therefore engaged in a multi-stakeholder initiative to encourage firms to operate safely within a framework that fully respects the rights of surrounding communities. We support the Initiative for Conservation in the Andean Amazon, a regional program designed to strengthen indigenous efforts to protect and conserve the Amazon rainforest. In Peru, our common efforts focus on the conservation of the Manu National Parks, together with the Yanisha and Ashaninka peoples, by providing training in sustainable resource management and expanding environmental conservation capacity. The United States also participates fully and actively in the Arctic Council, a high-level intergovernmental forum of the 8 Arctic states, where Arctic indigenous peoples, represented by permanent participant organizations, have a co-equal role. Consistent with President Obama's call for a new era of U.S. engagement with the world, the United States applauds the permanent forum's efforts to raise awareness of issues affecting the world's indigenous peoples and to generate ideas for substantially improving their livelihoods and communities. Thus, today, I'm pleased to announce that the United States has decided to review our position regarding the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We recognize that for many around the world, this declaration provides a framework for addressing indigenous issues. During President Obama's first year in office, tribal leaders encouraged the United States to re-examine its position on the declaration, an important recommendation that directly complements our commitment to work together with the international community on the many challenges that indigenous peoples face. We will be conducting a formal review of the declaration and the U.S. position on it. And as we move ahead, we look forward to consulting extensively with our valued and experienced colleagues in the federally recognized Indian tribes and interested non-governmental organizations. While many steps have been taken in the administration's first year, we are not satisfied. We seek to continue to work together with our partners in indigenous communities to provide security, prosperity, equality, and opportunity for all. There is no American history without Native American history. There can be no just and decent future for our nation that does not directly tackle the legacy of bitter discrimination and sorrow that the first Americans still live with. And America cannot be fully whole until its first inhabitants enjoy all the blessings of liberty, prosperity, and dignity. Let there be no doubt of our commitment, and we stand ready to be judged by the results. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Rice, for that very important statement. Yesterday as well, we had another positive statement, and so we are moving towards a truly universal recognition of the rights of indigenous peoples contained in the Declaration. We are very happy, the members of the Permanent Forum are very happy. We are now going to give the floor to the next speaker, Mr. Francisco Painepan from Chile.
Gracias, señor presidente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the forum.
Ñuque Mapu Gualmapu. Quiero agradecer la invitación.
I'd like to thank you for extending this invitation to the government of Chile to take part in this forum, the most important forum for the discussion of indigenous issues at the international level. Being here is a double honor for me. due to the fact that I am in charge of the National Indigenous Development Corporation, CONADI, the public service in charge of indigenous issues in Chile, and also as representative of one of the indigenous peoples that inhabit our territory, the Mapuche people. As you know, in Chile there are 9 indigenous peoples: Aymaras, Quechuas, Atacameños, Coyas, Diaguitas, Rapanui, Mapuches, Kawashkar, and Yaganes. According to the latest survey of the National Socioeconomic Classification, the people who identify themselves as belonging to indigenous peoples in Chile amount to a little over 1 million people, which is approximately 7% of the country's population. And if we look at these indicators over the last decade, we see that this percentage is on the rise. Mr. Chairman, as you know, a few weeks ago, a new government in Chile came to power in the middle of one of the worst natural tragedies that our country has experienced. All Chileans, including the 9 indigenous peoples who inhabit our territory, have suffered the devastation of the 8.8-degree earthquake, which plunged our country into mourning on the 27th of February, and which had its worst consequences in the southern part of the country, where most of the Mapuche live in Chile. The earthquake and the tsunami has forced the government and the entire Chilean society to focus their efforts on rebuilding the country, which has put us to the test, not only in terms of building new homes, roads, or factories, but also verifying the links of solidarity and friendship that we have. In this very difficult test, we have managed to strengthen one of the greatest assets of our country, our multicultural wealth, which has placed itself at the service of the great task, which is rebuilding Chile once again. Mr. Chairman, the main objective of our government at this stage, and which will require all of its efforts, is rebuilding the country. It's within this framework that the indigenous policy of the new government is being carried out. Our vision is based on the following pillars. First of all, a policy which reaffirms the valuable wealth of the indigenous peoples, their identity and their culture, and which also highlights the multicultural nature of our country. Secondly, a policy which goes from assistance to the empowerment of indigenous communities, promoting their training and self-development. Thirdly, besides continuing to pay attention to the rural indigenous population, we believe that given the characteristics of internal migration from the countryside to the cities, which we see in Chile, we have to pay more attention to the urban indigenous population. More than 70% of the indigenous population in Chile lives in urban areas. And fourthly, a policy which reforms the institutions which are in charge of government policies for indigenous peoples. Generally speaking, we believe that it is salutary to separate the policy design from its implementation and representation of the indigenous peoples. All these functions are now included in the body which I have the honor of leading. Mr. Chairman, the government of Chile places the utmost importance on protecting indigenous rights. We will work together with all of the social stakeholders to assess and move forward in the best way possible to implement Convention 169 of the ILO. At the same time, we should recall that many of the statements in the convention are part of Chilean legislation, and this has been the case for many years, and so it's already being applied. We are seeking the best initiatives with civil society and, above all, with indigenous peoples to make the convention viable in a real and constructive way, and always in agreement with the interests of the indigenous peoples. Mr. Chairman, in recent years, we have made efforts to acknowledge indigenous peoples and to protect their rights. Today, Chilean society is more aware than ever of its multicultural and multi-ethnic nature. We'd like to continue and to extend the progress that we have made along these lines, focusing our efforts in the future without forgetting the enormous and huge challenges that we have before us. We have to promote indigenous cultures and identities and prevent them from being lost, as we see in recent studies, to change CONADI in an excellent public service whose resources will be managed in a transparent and efficient way. Greater concern for urban indigenous peoples. This is where 70% of the indigenous population lives. We have to invest more in development, but in development which is decided by the indigenous peoples themselves, especially in agriculture, establishing the instruments which are necessary for the full development of rural communities in accordance with their own needs. We will also work arduously to eliminate poverty and to reduce indigenous poverty, which is much higher than the national average, even though in accordance with the latest KSN survey, this tendency has declined. We have to look for mechanisms which make it possible to restore positive relations in the southern part of Chile. And for this, only dialogue supported by concrete actions on the parties involved can restore mutual trust once again, and this is the basis of human relations. Mr. Chairman, I would not want to conclude without reiterating the open invitation to the Special Rapporteur, Mr. James Anaya, to visit Chile. The government of President Sebastián Piñera will continue with their policy of cooperation with the Rapporteur and with the different bodies of the United Nations, and especially with this forum. As you will see, there are many and enormous challenges which we face, but we can tackle them and overcome them in the coming years, seeking a consensus with all of the sectors of our society.
Chalto Mai, muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Gracias, señor Painepan.
Thank you, Mr. Painepan. We will now give the floor to the representative of the Republic of Ecuador, the Deputy Minister for the Coordination of Heritage, Dr. Juan Carlos Cuellar.
Dr. Cuellar tiene la palabra.
Presidente.
Dr. Cuellar. Mr. Chairman, in Ecuador, as in the rest of Latin America, we have been reproducing the cultural dependence which belonged to the colonial past of the subcontinent. And furthermore, when most of the constitutional charters contained colonial and neocolonial concepts which did not recognize the cultural diversity of a country which is made up of 14 nationalities, 18 indigenous peoples, 12 ancestral languages, and a large Afro-Equatorian population. The Ecuadorian society is marked by a racial bias which has contaminated all of its institutions, including the state institutions. From its birth and throughout its history, despite democratizing processes of the indigenous uprisings of Manuela León and Fernando de Aquilema, the Alfarist Revolution, the Ecuadorian state in the area of culture has shown its tendency towards favoring a white and mestizo ethnocracy, which is exclusive. The new constitution adopted in September 2008 recognizes the intercultural and plurinational nature of the Ecuadorian state and includes the Suma Casai, the good life, which is part of a long search for life models which have pushed social actors in South America over the last few decades. Our constitution explicitly incorporates principles and directions from Convention No. 169 of the ILO, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and other international instruments. Nonetheless, with the adoption of the Constitution alone, it is difficult for the socioeconomic reality of the country, which is marked by high levels of exclusion, discrimination, and domination. It is difficult to change this in the short term. If society as a whole has still not understood the basic principle of respect for others, nonetheless, the conditions for its positive transformation is underway. Mr. Chairman, the government has drawn up the National Plan for Good Living 2009-2013, building a plurinational and intercultural state as an instrument to coordinate public policies with public investment and management. The plan considers new challenges which are directed to the development and the building of a plurinational and intercultural state in order to achieve the good living of Ecuadorians, and in particular those who have been excluded thus far. Specific actions for the implementation of the national plan include a step taken by the government of Ecuador through its Ministry of Heritage and the Development Program and Cultural Diversity funded by the Fund for the Achievement of the Millennium Development Goals managed by UNDP. Among them, we find intercultural public policies which aim to promote the economies of indigenous peoples and nationalities and also to produce statistics, differentiated statistics, broken down according to ethnic origin and gender. It also aims to build capacity in the area of promotion of the rights of peoples and indigenous nationalities. This plan was drawn up on the basis of the report of the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals for Indigenous Peoples and Nationalities for Ecuador, published in 2009, where we find indicators for these peoples in the area of education, health, poverty, maternal health, the environment, among others. The President of the Republic, through Decree No. 60, adopted and began the implementation of the National Plan Against Racism and Social Exclusion and its implementation program, whose objective is to eliminate the different systematic forms and practices of racial discrimination and of ethnic and cultural exclusion in order to promote an intercultural society and to institutionalize the plurinational state. We should also point out that Ecuador has played an active role in the midterm review of the activities of the second international decade for the indigenous peoples of the world and has submitted a report which includes the commitment of the national government in favor of indigenous peoples and nationalities. Likewise, the government of Ecuador has submitted to the Permanent Forum its country report, which was drawn up with information delivered by the ministry which coordinated the policy, the Ministry of the Environment, Ministry of Labor Affairs, the National Secretariat for Migration, Secretariat of Peoples, Social Movements, and Civic Participation, as well as the Ministry of National Heritage. In preparing this report, we have managed to assess the modest but decisive work carried out by the national government. However, we will continue to identify a few gaps, such as the lack of indicators to measure and to examine the impact of the government's programs to meet the aspirations of the peoples and nationalities, in particular, indigenous women, from the point of view of their development. Mr. Chairman, good living, or the Sumaka Kaisai, as it is called, is as it is called in one of the indigenous languages of Ecuador, more than a principle which is included in the Charter, also includes the search for well-being, sustainability, balance, social justice, solidarity, and reciprocity. And as a result, the national government has been promoting the reconstitution, the restoration, the activation and revitalization of different cultures. The Ecuadorian state and its government is aware of the challenge of fighting for equality and the recognition of differences and believes it is extremely necessary and important to acknowledge the comprehensive concepts of development or what we call the good living of the indigenous nationalities and peoples. To do so, we have been promoting studies on the peoples of Ecuador, such as making more visible the peoples established in the province of Sucumbíos. We have also developed a postgraduate programs in intercultural public management where we include topics to improve the knowledge of peoples and nationalities. Policies, institutions, and development systems established by states still do not take into account these diversities, this plurality, and the coexistence of government, economic, social, educational, cultural, and spiritual systems, as well as a knowledge of the indigenous peoples and their natural resources. And hence, we invite all states to join us in this process of construction with the accompaniment of the United Nations system, as Ecuador is doing. In this area, Ecuador has undertaken a process to develop indigenous territorial districts, which will hold the authority of the territorial government, autonomous territorial government. Ecuador ratifies this commitment to support the permanent forum for indigenous issues as the highest mechanism in the United Nations, where indigenous peoples can help us reflect on ancestral processes of a life between human beings as well as the different ecosystems in Mother Earth. In conclusion, despite the gender inequities that exist in indigenous peoples and nationalities, we have seen very brave women who have been marking the history of our country within the political, diplomatic, educational, technological framework. Among them, Sister Miriam Masakisas, who is here next to me, and I would ask her to please stand up. She is a Quechua woman who has played an important role in the UN system for many years, a diplomat of the permanent mission of Ecuador, and currently advisor to the Ministry of National Heritage. And she is our government candidate for membership in the permanent forum. We are sure that if we manage to occupy this space, indigenous peoples and the national government will be well represented through its experience and commitment to human rights, in particular the rights of indigenous peoples and indigenous women. Thank you very much.
Gracias, señor
viceministro. Thank you, Deputy Minister. And now we are going to give the floor to the Minister of the Institute of Mr. Fagot Muller. You have the floor, Mr. Stedman.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Before our Chilean brother spoke, the ambassador of the United States took the floor, and she received two standing ovations. Well, I would like to take the floor as well, because that would be at the beginning and the end of the imbalance that exists in the world, because that would be reversing the disaster that we are beginning to experience. That leads us to believe that the United States is moving closer to the good life. And I understand that in the Quechua language, sumak kasai, sumak manye in Aymara, sumak yandaroko in Guarani, and in Nicaragua and Mesquite, we see lamanlaka. Mr. Chairman, I'm proud to represent this indigenous people of Nicaragua and at the same time the revolutionary government. I will be brief and I'll just make a few comments. First of all, to speak about identity with development, all of these national states, which came after the indigenous societies, which came after indigenous nations, they must already start to deliver the property that they have taken away. Now, that is what we're doing in Nicaragua. Almost 40% of the national territory is in our hands, in the hands of 10% of indigenous peoples. And Daniel Ortega, the president of the country has started to legalize and not simply legitimize, because we have an ancestral right to this land, and we are beginning to include other parties as well. That's the first thing to be done. Secondly, we have to come up with laws at the constitutional level which would guarantee our self-determination, the self-determination of these peoples. Our own institutions that would make it possible to decolonize and to stand on the basis of their own resources, because these lands which were usurped are full of natural resources. And I'd like to ask all of the national states, if you ask them who the Zoi belong to, they'll say it belongs to the state, to the governments. What governments? They belong to the indigenous peoples. And here I have the fundamental statutes. I have many copies of this, which show that what I'm saying is true. And to change this, we need the two-thirds vote of the Congress of the Republic. And so we have the legalization of our land. We have a law that allows for the self-determination of these peoples, and on the basis of their own resources, their own realities, their own identity, developing in a comprehensive way, and not in accordance with laws which they had no part in, such that what I want to say here is that we should begin to see balance once again in the world, because a legalization, the development of our own institutions based on our own realities, that is comprehensive development. It's a political instrument. Our own government, our own government, it could be a state within a state. You could interpret it that way, but our own reality forces us to accept other laws which don't necessarily belong to the national state. And in that respect, with a great deal of honor, I must say that we have a university that guarantees that we can apply these rules in the second stage of the revolutionary process, which is being experienced by Nicaragua. We are applying this through different mechanisms. For example, we have a university where all of its programs are based on the development of our communities, on the basis of our own realities. A university, one of the founders of this university is in this room, Dr. Miriam Nakunian. You are familiar with him. And she is a candidate who is promoted by civil organizations, which my government joins to support that candidacy, because our friend Mirna is here, and I would like her to stand up as well. I saw her here a while ago. Oh, there she is. On my left, we have Sister Mirna, whose university allows us to follow up on and to develop men and women based on the principles of self-determination, principles of communal development, in harmony with Mother Nature. That's what we have to do. If I were asked what we need to do in order to improve the world, what we need, the ambassador of the United States said this twice. Why did she say this? Because that has been a factor of imbalance. I would say that they didn't accept the Kyoto Protocol. She should practice what she preaches so that we can strengthen our links and know that we are not entering a disaster. Rather, we are beginning to live the beginning and the end of this horror which we are causing to Mother Nature. And the indigenous peoples of Nicaragua, in a strategic alliance with the government of the Republic, we have begun to walk on our own. And thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias a usted, señor.
Thank you, Minister. And now we will give the floor to the next speaker, Mr. Fred Caron, Deputy Minister of Indian Affairs for Northern Canada. Mr. Caron, you have the floor.
Tiene la palabra.
You have the floor, sir.
Tiene la palabra, señor Carr. Apriete el botón.
Can you press the button, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The government of Canada is pleased to continue our long and consistent practice of participation, contribution, and support the work of the Permanent Forum. Canada is supportive of all the mechanisms of the United Nations engaged on Indigenous issues. It has been our practice to provide extensive information to these mechanisms, and we will continue to do so. Mr. Chairman, Canada has taken and will continue to take effective action at home and abroad to promote and protect the rights of Indigenous peoples. In this vein, on March 3, 2010, the Government of Canada announced that it will take steps to endorse the United Nations declarations on the right of Indigenous peoples in a manner fully consistent with Canada's constitution and laws. Canada will take steps towards endorsing this aspirational document in a timely manner. Monsieur le Président.
Mr. Chairman, the topic of the permanent forum this year, Indigenous peoples, development of culture and identity, Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration, is a very vast topic and covers all of the aspects of development and all of the perspectives of this issue. This topic allows room for exploration and also the expression of various viewpoints on development and, in the case of Canada, also allows for an accurate representation of various needs and activities and various cultures, circumstances, experiences, and aspirations of the First Nations, the Inuits and the Métis, as well as the goals of the government of my country and viewpoints of the Canadian men and women. The Government of Canada recognizes the efforts made by the Permanent Forum in order to explore and deepen the notion of development in parallel with culture and identity, and to do so especially through research and holding of a group of expert meeting on the topic, which took place earlier this year in the month of January. We do hope that the dialogue which took place in the course of that meeting will enable us to move the process of exploration forward, as well as to understand the matter in a useful, balanced, and constructive way, and will ultimately lead to practical implementation in the real world.
During this ninth session of the Permanent Forum, Canada will share information on several aspects of its approach to Indigenous peoples' development with culture and identity through statements and through side events on the Government of Canada's consultation and accommodation process, our federal framework for Aboriginal economic development, as well as on urban Aboriginal issues. The Government of Canada also looks forward to participating in the half-day regional dialogue on April 22nd, which focuses this year on North America, a region unique in many ways, notably because, in the context of the Permanent Forum, it contains only two states, Canada and the United States of America, with a broad diversity of distinct Aboriginal peoples. Mr. Chairman, development should be a positive force for all. In examining development and its impact on and relationship to indigenous peoples, there is ample evidence that, all too often, development has proceeded as a result of policies and programs that have had negative effects on indigenous peoples' lives and livelihoods, and have contributed to a host of social problems and conflict. We know, historically, this has far too often been the case in Canada, and the government is committed to taking steps progressively together with Aboriginal communities to ensure a better today and a better future. Education is key to success and prosperity in today's knowledge-based economy. In Canada and around the world, improved efforts are needed to raise the educational attainment of Indigenous people and to include Indigenous culture in education programs. The Government of Canada is committed to working with Aboriginal peoples and provinces and territories to ensure that Aboriginal children receive the education they require for success. Recent progress in this area includes tripartite agreements with provincial governments and First Nations in British Columbia, New Brunswick, Manitoba, and Alberta to improve education outcomes for First Nations students in band-operated as well as provincial schools, and the signing of an Inuit Education Accord and the establishment of a National Committee on Inuit Education. Monsieur le Président.
Mr. Chairman, development with culture and our identity also has to be based on the basic principle of eliminating discrimination. On the 11th of March 2010, Honorable Chuck Strahl, the Minister of Indian and Northern Affairs, gave to the House of Commons a draft law C3, which is a law on gender equality when it comes to the inscription on Indians' register. This bill aims to fight against gender discrimination, which has existed for a long time, and will enable the grandchildren of women who have lost their status of Indian because of a marriage to a non-Indian to become inscribed in the register of Indians under the provisions of the law on Indians. The Minister of Indian and Northern Affairs of my country also announced that general questions having to do with the inscription and belonging, as well as the very important realities contained in treaties and cultural perspectives, will be taken into account within the framework of a joint process which will be developed together with various national Indigenous organizations and with the participation of groups of, as well as individuals coming from First Nations throughout the country.
In Canada, we have learned that it is essential to include cultural approaches to health and healing in program design while enhancing access to mainstream services. Indigenous communities that have successfully addressed significant health issues tend to share two common characteristics. First, a focus on cultural approaches to health, and as well as a focus on traditional roles and shared responsibilities with respect to collective and community health. The Department of Health Canada is undertaking activities that are designed to support Indigenous communities to address the health impacts of economic development and strengthen cultural aspects of health delivery. Mr. Chairman, as we reported during last year's permanent forum, on January 27, 2009, the Government of Canada released its Economic Action Plan in response to the deteriorating global economic situation. In recognition that traditionally vulnerable groups are often those who are most affected by recession and unemployment, the following consultations with provincial and territorial government leaders and Aboriginal leaders, Canada's Economic Action Plan committed $1.4 billion in investments over 2 years related to Aboriginal-specific programming. The aim is to promote greater participation by Aboriginal men and women in the Canadian economy and to address the specific challenges and opportunities they face. Monsieur le Président.
Chairman, in the beginning of March, Canada, in the throne speech, reaffirmed its commitment to initiatives aimed at the indigenous peoples. This was illustrated in the budget for the year 2010, which, in certain cases, has increased the support within the framework of the Economic Action Plan. The main points of this commitment consist of ensuring that First Nations children get an education at all of the levels that they need in order to be successful, and to tackle the issue which is presented by the considerable number of indigenous women who are missing and killed, and to do this through the specific measures. It also consists by increasing and improving the infrastructure in First Nations communities through establishing partnerships with organizations of First Nations and provincial and territorial governments when it comes to providing children and family services. Also, this is done through the implementation of the regulations having to do with Indian resident schools, improving the health of the indigenous people and broadening the action plan for the supply of drinking water and the treatment of wastewater in First Nations.
While this review has covered some key Government of Canada initiatives on development with culture and identity, this is only one element of this equation. These initiatives are undertaken with the Indigenous peoples in Canada to whom they are directed. We look forward to hearing the perspectives of Indigenous representatives during this forum on ways to move forward on the challenging and fundamental issue of development with culture and identity. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias, señor viceministro.
Thank you, sir. I thank you in particular for the announcement of an upcoming review of Canada's position with respect to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We would now like to give the floor to Mr. Fabio Valencia Cosillo, Minister of Interior and Justice of the Republic of Colombia. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My delegation congratulates you for your election as chairman of this meeting, and we are satisfied, deeply satisfied, to see that a Latin American is leading the most important body of the United Nations when it comes to indigenous issues. Today, Colombia will refer to progress that we have achieved in economic, social, and cultural rights related to the pursuit of a development process which respects the culture and identity of indigenous peoples. Colombia currently has 1,392,623 indigenous people, which is 3.4% of the Colombian population. They make up 4,141 indigenous communities, corresponding to 82 peoples, and for them, an area of 34 million hectares has been legally recognized as collective land, corresponding to 30% of the country, and this area is almost the equivalent of Finland or Vietnam. The government of President Alvaro Uribe has striven to guarantee the rights of indigenous peoples and has placed a greater emphasis on a direct political dialogue by the President of the Republic. The dialogue carried out by the President of the Republic, the Minister of Interior and Justice, and the Deputy Minister of the Interior, with a permanent presence in the reservations and indigenous councils, respecting their autonomy and their particularities. The Ministry of Interior and Justice is responsible for the design of public policy on indigenous issues, as well as in human rights, the latter shared with the office of the Vice President of the Republic. After the indigenous peoples interrupted in 2007 their participation and dialogue with the government in the existing consultation, we have recovered that political dialogue with national indigenous organizations through executive decrees. We have restored the consultation mechanisms, such as the Indigenous Permanent Consultation Board, the Human Rights National Board, and the Amazon Regional Board. In 2009, 14 meetings were held in these spaces, and we have created new and special situations, such as the round table for the Awa people, a people particularly victimized by the FARC, the narco-terrorist group. As to our regulations, we have to highlight three aspects. The Constitution enshrines the ethnic and cultural diversity of our country, the ability to run for Congress of the Republic, both in the special indigenous jurisdiction that guarantees their representation, as well as in the national electoral jurisdiction, thus expanding that representation. The respect for indigenous local jurisdiction, in this sense, we have completed 18 pilot projects that harmonize indigenous and ordinary judicial jurisdictions. And also, we are planning to do so with other peoples. And we have also building 5 indigenous justice houses so that they can apply their jurisdiction. And the first one will be open later this year, and it will belong to the Wayuu people in Uribia. My government's political commitment can be seen in 2 major presidential orders related to indigenous issues. First, Directive 016 of 2006, which is called Sectoral Policy for Recognition, Prevention, and Protection of Indigenous Communities, in which specific instructions are given to the General Commander of the Armed Forces and the Director of the National Police to strengthen their policy of recognition, prevention, and protection of human rights of Indigenous peoples' communities in the country by public forces. Secondly, the Presidential Directive 01 of 2010 addressed it to all administrative entities, both central and decentralized, at the national level, to ensure the fundamental right to prior consultation within the framework of the Constitution of Colombia and the ILO Convention 169. For the first time, this directive determines a clear and unique methodology for the consultation process and the actions that are required. The government initiated in 2003 3 consultation processes a year. And today, in 2010, we have 107 processes, which shows that they have become stronger. Colombia reiterates its respect for the consultation process under ILO Convention 169, seeking a balance between the development of the country and the rights of indigenous peoples. The Ministry of Interior and Justice has coordinated the development of public policies with a differentiated approach. For example, with the Ministry of Education, we have supported ethno-education policy aimed at increasing educational standards in indigenous communities, always respecting their right to self-determination. With the Colombian Family Welfare Institute, nutritional supplements are offered to indigenous children in programs that prevent school dropout and promote regular attendance. With the Ministry of Social Protection, we have worked to enhance medical care with a differentiated approach through 6 indigenous health providers. With respect to forest displacement, we have designed a comprehensive plan to support indigenous communities at high risk of vulnerability and risk of extinction, especially that which is caused by the illegal actions of the narco-terrorist groups and criminal gangs. This plan was approved by the National Council for Comprehensive Attention to the Displaced Population and responds to recommendation number 5 of the previous Rapporteur on Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples, Professor Rodolfo Stavenhagen. This plan identifies intersectoral actions through consultation and regional workshops with departmental, national, and local authorities and indigenous organizations with concrete institutional, budgetary, and specific commitments. We have promoted productive projects for indigenous communities. For example, a hotel in Tiradentro, Cauca, which is attended and administered by indigenous peoples, thus promoting ethnotourism. We have promoted partnerships with the National Federation of Coffee Growers for the marketing and export of coffee from Tiradentro, which is now in the Juan Valdez stores around the world. We have made every effort to comply with agreements made with indigenous peoples, even those adopted by previous governments. This is the case of the social and community Minga, in which we recover more than 2,000 previous commitments made by national governments with our indigenous brothers from the late 80s. And through a process of dialogue and consultations, we agreed to action related to 400 issues, commitments, and deadlines to meet. Our goal to pay the social debt has been improved as long as there are institutionally and economically viable solutions. And progress is certainly made in education, land, and environment, despite the complexity and disparity of views that persist in these and other areas. For example, in relation to the terrible massacre of the Nile in 1991, a commitment was made then as a state reparation for the indigenous Paez people to recognize property on 15,663 hectares. At the beginning of the present government, only 800 hectares had been recognized. Today, after 8 years, we are at 84% of compliance, and 2,200 hectares are pending, and they're already prioritized by the indigenous peoples concerned, with resources in the national budget for 8 million pesos. On the other hand, in the last 2 years, about 50 intercultural and interethnic conflicts have been addressed in a comprehensive and sustained manner. Conflicts through the decision 004 of 2009 issued by the Constitutional Court in the context of sentence T025 of 2004, the government has had the opportunity to design a national program of guarantees for indigenous peoples that is being subjected to the prior consultation process with all of the indigenous peoples and communities in the country for further implementation. Similarly, 14 of a total of 34 safeguard plans have also been designed, implemented, and set as ordered by the Constitutional Court, agreed individually with each people. From 2008 to 2010, 46 ethnological surveys were carried out and 6 agreements were signed to carry out another 40 ethnological studies for a total of 86 at the end of this year. In order to establish the recognition of indigenous communities, their subsequent registration, and the promotion of their rights. As we have noted above, the National Census of 2005 recognized 3.4% of the total national population as indigenous people. 49.6% of them are women. From these figures, we understand the fundamental role of indigenous women in the survival of these peoples. For this reason, special spaces have been opened up for indigenous women to meet internally, even if they do not belong to a national organization. We have agreed with them on the establishment of a program to protect indigenous women, and the first phase will be completed in the second half of this year, with the second phase completed in 2011. Its focus emphasizes training, cross-cultural practices, as well as customs. Under the protection program of the Ministry of Interior and Justice, we have agreed to the relevant measures of individual and collective security for indigenous people with a differentiated approach. Today, we have 283 leaders which are covered in this program and 1,171 measures implemented thus far. We also maintain our support for our legal constitutional order. As you can see, the facts that we have described here and the government's policy, all of this is directed to comply with the aspirations of that declaration. To give certainty to the stability and continuity of Indigenous policy, even in with the next change of government, we are developing an economic and social policy document before the completion of President Uribe's term. And this will be the framework of a long-term state policy, which will include public policy guidelines that we have agreed to with all of the national Indigenous organizations, and whose methodology and design was done in consultation with the 34 safeguard plans that we are carrying out. We have also taken the decision that we don't only have the 34 safeguard plans, but at the government's initiative, we are going to have 48 more plans to cover all of the Indigenous peoples with this safeguard plan, which articulates their culture, identity, and lifestyle. The government's policies and what will continue as a state policy will continue fighting for the protection of human rights of Indigenous peoples, their culture, their customs, and their land, a respect for their own education and jurisdiction, all of this framed in compliance with the Colombian Constitution. We will make every effort to continue to protect Indigenous communities affected by violent actions of illegal groups and government agents that oppose the policy of President Uribe's policy. I would also like to say that Colombia has presented the candidate of Gabriel Moyuyu for her possible election to the next permanent forum on Indigenous issues. Gabriela Moyuyu has been an important Indigenous leader, senator of Colombia, a defender of the people, a defender of the Indigenous peoples of Colombia, a leading spokesperson for Indigenous communities and peoples who, through these mechanisms, have expressed their support for this candidacy. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the government of Colombia, I would like to thank the United Nations for their cooperation in some of the initiatives I've mentioned, and in particular, those aimed at strengthening the protection and promotion of the rights and development with identity for all Indigenous peoples. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
A usted las gracias, señor ministro.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. And given the fact that we don't have very much time, I would like to beg all of the distinguished representatives of states here to please be brief, because we understand that there's a great deal of progress in every state, but with the list of speakers that we have, we're not going to be able to conclude our dialogue as was originally planned for this afternoon. Our next speaker is Dr. Jeff Harmer, who is the Secretary of the Department of Families, Housing, Community Service, and Indigenous Affairs. For Australia. Dr. Harmer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Australian delegation has a statement in two parts. I will begin, and my colleague from the Torres Strait Regional Authority will deliver part two. Mr. Chairman, may I congratulate you on your election and wish you well in your endeavours. I would also like to thank Ms. Tauli Korpus for her leadership as chair of the Permanent Forum. At last year's Permanent Forum, Australia was the first country to announce its change of position to support the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We were pleased and moved yesterday to be joined by our New Zealand friends and colleagues in that support, and we commend the progress made by the governments of Canada and the United States. There is still much work to be done on the Declaration, and we look forward to working with governments and the Permanent Forum to advance Indigenous peoples' rights internationally. Australia recognises that it is crucial for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders in Australia that development takes place in the context of recognition of and respect for their unique cultures and attachment to the land and waters. We welcome the Permanent Forum's consideration of the theme, Indigenous Peoples, Development with Culture and Identity. The Australian Government recognises that support for Indigenous land, culture and language assists in maintaining strong communities, improving wealth creation and economic stability. This growing appreciation for Indigenous culture has brought economic benefits not only to individual artists, but to their communities and to other Indigenous communities where the arts centre is a key aspect of social cohesion and community identity. In Australia, the government has a range of legislation and other programs designed to support connections to country and the social, cultural and economic benefits that flow from this connection. The Australian government is committed to ensuring that traditional owners and local Indigenous communities derive long-term benefits from engagement with resources industry through ownership and the control that they have over their land. The Indigenous Land Corporation also assists Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders to acquire and manage land for social, economic and cultural benefits. Some traditional owners have entered into agreements with the Australian Government to promote biodiversity and cultural resource conservation of their land. Indigenous protected areas help Indigenous communities to protect their significant cultural values for future generations. The attachment to land and culture is reflected in the dynamic Indigenous visual arts sector. In many remote communities, arts centres are the primary or sole vehicle for economic activity, leading to income and employment opportunities. Through the National Art and Crafts Industry Support Program, the Australian Government provides support to over 80 Indigenous arts centres, the majority of which are based in remote locations, which offer direct professional support to over 5,000 artists. Support is also provided to Indigenous visual arts peak organisations and advocacy bodies. The Australian Government recognises that language is integral to the maintenance of culture. Funding through the National Indigenous Languages Policy is aimed at addressing the serious problem of Indigenous language loss through a coordinated national response. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture in Australia is vibrant and dynamic. It has its roots in the land and the sea and a traditional knowledge of hundreds of generations. I now hand over to my colleague from the Torres Strait Regional Authority to deliver part two of our statement. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land that where we are gathering today. I would like to use this intervention to highlight the significance of the Torres Strait Regional Sea Claim in preserving the culture and identity of the Torres Strait Islander people. The Torres Strait people throughout the ages have had a strong tie and cultural connection to the sea. This connection has not been broken for thousands of years, and having this recognised in law is critical for protecting our future. Our bond to the sea goes across many areas of our lives, from culture and storytelling to providing us with food. We use materials from our waters to produce vital tools, trade items and sacred artefacts that are part of our traditional ceremonies, as well as rely on these resources to build a regional economy. For us, the sea is an extension of the land, and we are still coming to terms with the legal separation of these two according to Australian law. Based on this natural extension of traditional ownership, the Torres Strait Regional Sea Claim was applied for over a large part of waters in the Torres Strait in 2001. In 2008, the Federal Court of Australia commenced hearing the Regional Sea Claim, and all arguments were concluded in July 2009. The Torres Strait Regional Sea Claim's findings will be very important for the Torres Strait Islander people for two main reasons. The first is that it will test the core principles of the Native Title Act and the commitment of the Australian government and legal system to recognising native title for the Indigenous people of Australia, especially over those seas. We are aware that in recent times, other First Australian brothers and sisters have made claims over sea country with varying results. Our spirits are not dampened by these rulings, and we aim to build on them to create a greater sense of hope for our future. Recognising native title allows for the ongoing maintenance and preservation of Torres Strait culture and identity. A positive finding in favour of the Torres Strait applicant is an opportunity for the Australian government to acknowledge our traditional rights to sea-based ownership and the resources contained within these waters. Our traditional rights to the sea surrounding our island homes is supported by Article 3 and Article 32, Paragraph 1 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. The second reason that a positive finding favoring the Torres Strait applicants will be critical to the future is that it will strengthen the current legal structure to protect our land and waters and ensure that we will always have the lead role in determining the future for our communities and our environment. Unlike any other part of Australia, the Torres Strait shares a physical border with Papua New Guinea and Indonesia. Traditionally and historically, we were able to defend our sea territories from trespassers and therefore protected from being overfished or exploited. We have made some progress in recent times as Torres Strait Islanders have been able to secure the majority ownership of two vital fisheries within our region to build an economic future. But this needs to be complemented by legal recognition that we own our seas. While our people work in partnership with the Australian and Queensland government to protect the Australian border, we are still seeking real recognition of our connection to the seas in the Torres Strait and a strengthened legal framework that will allow us to maintain our connection and provide for ourselves by sustainably using the resources for many generations to come. The regional sea claim is an essential part of protecting the rights, and we can only hope that the Federal Court of Australia will acknowledge this by granting us native title over our waters. We must protect the limited resources that we have due to the relatively small geographic area of our homeland, because if we exhaust these, then we will have nothing to hand over to our future generation. Mr. Chair, I thank you for this opportunity to share our journey with the 9th Permanent Forum on the Indigenous Issue and ask that you will continue to monitor the progress of this historic sea claim in the Torres Strait. Thank you.
Gracias a usted.
I'd like to thank you. And I'd like to thank the representatives of Australia for the example they have given us and their support for the Declaration of the United Nations, whose example is being followed by other countries. And this is going to be a very important event for us so that it becomes a truly universal declaration. And now I will give the floor to Mr. Peter Schweiger from the European Union. Mr. Schweiger, you have the floor.
Señor Presidente.
Mr. Chairman, Excellencies.
Thank you for giving me the floor. The European Union is pleased to be able to address the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues for the first time. This forum is an important venue for the promotion of dialogue between governments, the United Nations, and Indigenous peoples, and the European Union would like to take this opportunity to express its support for the work of the forum. On behalf of the EU, I would also like to congratulate you, Señor Presidente, for your election as the chairperson of this forum. Mr. Chairman, a pillar of the European integration is to build respect for its rich cultural and linguistic diversity as part of the enhancement of Europe's cultural heritage. From this perspective, we are inherently interested in the proceeding of this session, which is focused on development with culture and identity. The European Union is also founded on the values of respect for human dignity, equality, and respect for human rights, including the rights of persons belonging to minorities. The EU is committed to these values, as well as to the combating of discrimination and social exclusion, both within Europe and its relation with the wider world. In concrete terms, in application of the powers conferred to the EU by the treaties, the European Union has put in place within its borders a legal framework to fight discrimination, racism, and xenophobia, and launched financial programs to support activities aimed at combating these phenomena on the ground. The European Union has made human rights a central aspect of its external relations, be it in the political dialogues it holds with third countries, be it in its action in multilateral fora such as the United Nations, or in its development policy and assistance. Indigenous issues form an integral part of the European Union's human rights policy. The principles of the European Union's engagement towards indigenous peoples are applied in accordance with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The adoption of the declaration in 2007 has advanced the rights and ensured the continued development of indigenous peoples around the world. Mr. Chairman, in a number of countries, indigenous peoples continue to be marginalized and discriminated against, and many still live in poverty. Their voices are not always heard when economic development plans are formulated. During the past decades, the international community has gradually taken concrete steps to raise awareness of the situation of the world's indigenous peoples and to facilitate dialogue with their representatives. The creation of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues was an important step in promoting this dialogue and cooperation on issues pertaining to indigenous peoples, which contributed to the adoption of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The European Union encourages states to facilitate the implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples by, inter alia, translating it into the languages of indigenous peoples in their respective countries in order to raise awareness among different actors of its provisions. The EU also attaches importance and closely follows the work of the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples of the Human Rights Council and of the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous people in relation to the promotion and protection of all human rights, civil, political, economic, social, and cultural rights, including the right to development. The principles of the European Union's engagement towards indigenous peoples are applied in the context of the aforementioned declaration. Indigenous peoples' issues are mainstreamed into the European Commission's development cooperation strategies. The EU is also enhancing awareness of indigenous issues among its staff. And just to give you one example, a European Commission study titled Civil Society Mapping in Asia, focusing on Nepal, will analyze the role of indigenous organizations within Nepal and make recommendations on how to include such organizations in the European Union's policy dialogue and programming cycle. Direct support for civil society organizations working on indigenous issues is also provided through the European Instrument for Democracy and Human Rights. The projects funded by this instrument are targeted at international organizations, NGOs, and indigenous organizations. For example, support is provided to indigenous peoples and their representatives in participating in the UN activities relating to indigenous peoples. The instrument also supports the activities on documentation and research on indigenous peoples' issues. Mr. Chairman, in the context of the Action Plan for Forest Law Enforcement, Governance and Trade, the European Commission invited proposals addressing deforestation and forest degradation in a recent call for proposals under the Environment Thematic Programme. Through the promotion of good governance and sustainable management of forests, these proposals should benefit forest-dependent, local and indigenous communities and support the participation of civil society organizations, indigenous people organizations and other non-state actors in the preparation, negotiation and or implementation of voluntary partnership agreements between the EU and third countries on the trade of timber. Mr. Chairman, despite progress, there's little reason for complacency. In particular, I would like to point out that many indigenous peoples are especially affected by climate change. as they might live in some of the most fragile and vulnerable ecosystems. Climate change can threaten the very survival of many indigenous peoples, and it affects traditional lifestyles and cultures. The European Union recognizes that cooperation with and support for the establishment of partnerships with indigenous peoples contributes to promotion of human rights, but also to sustainable development. The European Union continues to participate actively in the initiatives in the framework of the Convention of Biological Diversity for supporting local and indigenous peoples in their contribution to the conservation and sustainable use of biological diversity. Effective participation of indigenous peoples in projects relating to their development needs to be based on their free, prior, and informed consent so as to further promote the implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Mr. Chairman, the European Union looks forward to the debate during this session of the forum. And with these words, I thank you, Mr. President.
El próximo orador.
The next speaker on our list is Mr. Jarmo Vinanen, permanent representative of Finland to the United Nations. You have the floor, sir.
Tiene la palabra, señor Jarmo.
Mr. Chairperson, let me first say that Finland aligns herself with the statement just delivered by the delegation of the European Union. Finland salutes the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues as the most important international forum for cooperation among indigenous peoples and for interaction between them and governments. Finland will continue to support the forum by both financially and politically to strengthen its authority to influence the UN system. Finland is a firm believer in equality. At the same time, we emphasize the need for special measures to protect the rights of those who are at the greatest risk of becoming victims of direct or indirect discrimination. Therefore, for Finland, a key international and domestic objective is to promote development that facilitates communities and cultures to survive and develop in their own terms. Mr. Chairman, we are pleased that the Permanent Forum will pay attention to the situation in the Arctic region also during this session. The realization of the Article 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples is a key issue. This requires effective cooperation between the indigenous peoples, governments, and other stakeholders. This is especially true in countering and limiting the adverse effects of climate change to ensure that indigenous cultures, livelihoods, languages, religions, traditions can continue to thrive in spite of possible drastic changes in their environment. Mr. Chairman, the status of Sami as indigenous people was recognized in the Constitution of Finland in 1995. According to the Constitution, the Sami have the right to maintain and develop their own language and culture. In this context, culture has a broad meaning and covers also traditional livelihoods of the Sami, such as reindeer herding, fishing, and hunting. Moreover, the Constitution of Finland safeguards the Sami people's linguistic and cultural self-government within the Sami homeland area. Maybe the most significant way for the Sami to participate in societal decision-making processes lies on the statutory obligation set out in the Act on the Sami Parliament. This Act requires the authorities to negotiate with the Sami Parliament in all far-reaching and important measures which may directly and specifically affect the status of Sami as an indigenous people and which concern matters in the Sami homeland. For the Sami in Finland, language is a key element of the Sami identity. In this regard, great challenges remain, for example, when it comes to the provision of education and daycare in the Sami languages. This has been recognized by the government, and work is underway to address this issue. Making the self-government achieve its aims in practice requires constant attention. Finland remains committed to developing national and international decision-making processes in accordance with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in such a way that full and effective participation of the Sami is assured in decision-making processes that affect them. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much for having used your time so well. And now I will give the floor to the representative of Spain, Ms. Dolores Martín, from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation. Madam Martín, you have the floor.
Sí, muchas gracias, señor.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Permanent Forum, first of all, my delegation would like to say that we're very pleased with this upgrading in my stature, but I represent the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation. My delegation would like to take this opportunity to share this forum news on the Spanish government's commitment to theme 3 of the agenda, which this year places emphasis on the development of Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Through the Culture and Development Strategy of the Spanish Agency for International Development Cooperation, Spain is committed to the momentum of cultural rights recognition processes, supporting progress in international standards, reinforcing action for social inclusion and intercultural dialogue, and incorporating the backing of cultural legislation with a focus on freedom and cultural diversity. Moreover, it is the objective of our cooperation policy to contribute in such a way that persons belonging to groups of particular ethnicities and cultures can exercise their rights to freely express their ideas and to maintain their traditions. In this context, cooperation with indigenous peoples, understood as putting into practice action which encourages their participation in development processes while recognizing their cultural specificities, this constitutes a key dimension of the horizontal priority to respect cultural diversity. This priority is evident throughout the documents on our systemic approach to cooperation and the Spanish strategy for cooperation with indigenous peoples itself establishes that support for self-determination and the need to proceed in the context of full, prior, and informed consent are fundamental tools to ensure that our actions for development contribute to the maintenance of cultural diversity and that indigenous peoples can freely decide their present and their future. To accomplish this and establishing development policies that guarantee respect for cultural diversity and the recognition of the rights of all indigenous peoples require raising society's awareness of indigenous cultures and, above all, that indigenous peoples have the possibility and the capacity to speak for themselves and to explain their ways of life. With this in mind, the Spanish Agency for International Development and Cooperation, through its indigenous program, supported the Latin American Coordinator of Indigenous Peoples Film and Communication, the LCIPFC, with the objective of formulating an indigenous communication strategy in Latin America for the period 2009-2011. There are also efforts to promote the use of the media as a tool for the development of these peoples. And this was clear in last July's realization of the International Workshop Communication and Indigenous Peoples Challenges and Issues, which took place in the month of July in Santa Cruz de la Sierra, Bolivia. On the other hand, one of the basic principles that underlie all the actors and instruments of the Spanish government's cooperation policy with the indigenous peoples is the recognition that there is a close tie between identity, culture, and view of the cosmos, and the effective stewardship of lands and territories, since these constitute the foundation of these peoples' existence as culturally differentiated social entities. In this context, Spain has supported the full and effective political participation of indigenous peoples in regional and international processes that affect them. Promoting the attendance of indigenous representatives in this permanent forum and in meetings of the Special Working Group on Article 8J of the Convention on Biological Diversity. In addition, and with the objective of contributing to the fulfillment of Article 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, my delegation would like to highlight the active participation of the Government of Spain in the organization of the Latin American Meeting of Governments, Indigenous Peoples, Employees, and Workers on Indigenous Childhood and Child Labor. This meeting was organized by 9 institutions and took place in the Spanish Cooperation Training Center in Cartagena de Indias, Colombia, from the 8th to the 10th of March. And its purpose was to reveal the reality of indigenous child labor in order to abolish it and to outline a strategy within the context of international norms that governments and indigenous organizations alike would share, taking into account the vision of indigenous peoples and leading to a tackling of this concrete and complex issue. Over these 3 days, more than 180 people from 17 Latin American countries worked on aligning their positions in order to outline a plan of action which would involve governments as much as indigenous organizations in abolishing indigenous child labor based on 3 thematic blocks: the concept of child labor, the need to establish a consensual public policy, and existing educational systems in Latin America. Mr. Chairman, I would like to take advantage of this opportunity to announce here the 9th General Assembly of the Fund for the Development of the Indigenous Peoples of Latin America and the Caribbean to be held in Madrid from the 9th to 10th of September. Since its inception in 1992, during the second summit of the Ibero-American heads of state and presidents, Spain has been one of the 22 states that have ratified its convention and has annually contributed to its institutional financing and to the realization of cooperation programs. The organization of the General Assembly in our country is yet another demonstration of the joint commitment of our government to the process of self-determination for indigenous peoples. In addition, the Assembly will be accompanied by a series of parallel activities that will undoubtedly serve as a platform in Europe, promulgating different cultural manifestations and identities of indigenous peoples of Latin America. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank you. And now I will give the floor to Ms. Yanacy Acosta from the Republic of Cuba. You have the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For over 2 decades, indigenous people from all regions of the world have been peacefully calling for the international community to adopt a specific document endorsing the protection of indigenous peoples at the international level. At the adoption of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples constitute a historic victory in the fight by these peoples for the recognition of their legitimate ancient rights. Cuba believes that the adoption of the Declaration cannot be the end of the process, but rather the beginning of a new stage in which we must work together for the effective recognition of the equality and the right to self-determination for more than 370 million indigenous people around the world, as well as their right to keep their own institutions, culture, and spiritual traditions without suffering due to racism and discrimination. Along with ILO Convention 169, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is an international benchmark to establish national guidelines which will contribute to the actions included in the second decade of Indigenous Peoples. Mr. Chairman, Cuba reaffirms Article 3 of that declaration, establishing the right of Indigenous peoples to self-determination and to freely determine their political status and to freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. While progress has been achieved in establishing human rights standards for Indigenous peoples, which account for over 5% of the world's population, they continue to face serious violations of those rights. Issues like violence, marginalization, the dispossession of their land, forced removal or relocation, the denial of land rights, among others, are an unfortunate reality in Indigenous communities in many parts of the world. Actions must be urgently taken without delay to ensure that Indigenous peoples have the right to own and to use their land and its resources. There are very few countries that recognize the rights of Indigenous peoples to the land. The role of the United Nations in the second decade should not be limited to defining the rights of Indigenous peoples. Moreover, it is unacceptable that those rights are being integrated into development parameters that are rejected by virtually most of these peoples because they are alien to their vital needs and their specificities. As in the past, Cuba will continue to support the just demands of Indigenous peoples for the effective realization and free exercise of their rights. Thank you very much. Thank you. I will now call on Ambassador Martin Ney of the Permanent Mission of Germany to the United Nations. Ambassador, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, Excellencies, representatives of indigenous populations, ladies and gentlemen, Germany fully aligns itself with the statement just made by the European Union. Germany remains deeply committed to the successful implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. As indigenous peoples are often particularly disadvantaged and victims of human rights violations, the German government attaches great importance to ensure respect for and compliance with the human rights of indigenous peoples and to consider in particular the special needs of indigenous women. This major objective is the guiding principle both of German foreign as well as economic and development cooperation. German development cooperation also aims at strengthening equal access to basic services and resources in order to improve the living conditions of indigenous people, as well as to reinforce the networks of indigenous organizations at national and cross-border level. I am particularly pleased to announce that Germany will again contribute this year to the Indigenous Trust Fund with an amount of $50,000. This reaffirms our commitment to promote the participation of Indigenous peoples' representatives in important events like the Permanent Indigenous Forum and our support of the objectives of the second international decade of the world's Indigenous peoples. Mr. Chairman, a new paradigm within development, called development with identity, has recently been promoted by several UN agencies. It refers to a process that includes strengthening of indigenous peoples, their sustained interaction with the environment, and their management of natural resources and territories in accordance with their own worldview and governance. The challenge for the strategy lies in supporting and promoting development initiatives unique to indigenous peoples in order to improve their living conditions through their own leadership and in a manner consistent with each community's specific cultural situation and vision. In line with this new paradigm, Germany is currently implementing a new type of project by reviving cultural traditions as a means to facilitate common vision and actions of indigenous communities in the highlands of the heart of Borneo, Indonesia. Let me also mention that since 2006, the rights and needs of indigenous peoples in Latin America have been mainstreamed in all German development cooperation activities in the region. In 2009, about 40 projects with a total volume of around 41 million euros were implemented. Mr. Chairman, in accordance with this year's special theme, Indigenous Peoples' Development with Culture and Identity, Article 3 and 32 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, please allow me to mention a few examples of how Germany supports Indigenous Peoples. First, let me start with self-determined development or use of Indigenous Peoples' lands or traditional occupied territories, which relates to Article 32 of the UN Declaration. Germany strongly supported the participation of indigenous political organizations from Latin America in the international negotiations on biodiversity, protected areas, and the Framework Convention on Climate Change. This year, Germany will continue its support and assist these organizations with the preparation for and participation in the forthcoming negotiations on the Convention on Biological Diversity. In Brazil, Germany supports the National Indian Foundation, FUNAI, in the demarcation of Indian territories in the Brazilian Amazon and the promotion of small pilot projects in the demarcated areas. These programs form part of a large multilateral pilot program to preserve the Brazilian rainforest and allowed for 115 Indians' lands to be legally titled during the last years, covering a total area of 10% of the Brazilian Amazon. In Ecuador, Germany funds a program for the protection of tropical forests in Morona Pastaza, which is implemented by staff of the Achuar Nation. Second, with regard to direct political participation and independent administration of resources, let me mention our regional programs in Bolivia, Ecuador, and Guatemala. These programs aim at promoting indigenous organizations' abilities to influence political decision-making directly. In Bolivia, for example, indigenous municipalities have been supported in administering their own resources. In Ecuador, the national umbrella organization CONAIE developed law proposals following the introduction of the new constitution. The indigenous women's organization MOLOI and CONAWIGUA in Guatemala worked out and presented a proposal for the national policy on women. Third and last, education is another vital factor for self-determined development. Germany supports the establishment of a network of universities throughout Latin America that train highly qualified personnel for indigenous organizations and Latin American governments on indigenous and intercultural rights and issues. Since 2005, 26 universities from 11 countries have joined the network, and so far, almost 300 students completed the postgraduate courses. Some of them now occupy key positions in policymaking in Latin America. Mr. Chairman, let me conclude by reiterating Germany's support to indigenous peoples and to the successful implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you very much, sir. I will now give the floor to Ambassador Jorge Valero, the Deputy Minister. He is a representative of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. Mr. Valero has the floor.
The señor presidente.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm the Deputy Alternate Ambassador, Julio Escalona, on behalf of Mr. Valera. Allow me to congratulate you for your election as the chairman of this meeting. And we are pleased to see that you are a representative from a neighboring country, the plurinational state of Bolivia. Indigenous brothers and sisters, allow me to convey warm revolutionary greetings from the government of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. Allow me to express to you our vision with respect to the issue that we are dealing with today in this ninth session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and that is the need to move towards the adoption of an alternative model of a plurinational, pluricultural, and multi-ethnic and ecologically sustainable development. Our delegation fully agrees with the assessment delivered by the International Group of Experts on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples with respect to the fact that the current dominant development model, which is based on economic liberalism, the overexploitation of human beings and production and consumption beyond ecological limits, this has led to poverty and great inequality, as well as the violation of human rights and widespread devastation of our planet. This is the time to look towards the past, from the present, and with a view to the future, because the root of the current problems has to do with a radical change in our vision of the world, of nature, and of society. We have gone from a world which had at its center all human beings, all living beings, all of creation, to an anthropocentric world whose main focus is man and not women, and all of the other beings are simply objects that only exist when man thinks about them. We have gone from nature as a source of life and as life itself to nature as a commodity, as a raw material, as a natural resource. From human beings as a unit of spirit, mind, body, and nature, to a man as a human resource, as a commodity. We have gone from a God which has created beauty, music, birds, and human beings as an extension of the Creator. We have gone from this to a God which has become a commodity and has been brought down to a level of human convenience. This is the world of capital, of neoliberal globalization, of war, of the devastation of humankind, of our planet. The world of a financial, economic, ecological, and food crisis. Of attacks against native civilizations, as well as original nations and cultures. And so it's absolutely necessary that we develop a new plurinational, pluricultural, multi-ethnic, and plurireligious civilization with the indigenous past as one of the most crucial aspects in forging and building the new humankind. In contrast with the paradigm of neoliberal globalization, in Venezuela we have been implementing an endogenous development model based on the principles of solidarity, rationality, and balance, where the rights of indigenous peoples and communities, including the recognition and protection of their culture and identity, all of this plays a crucial role. The Bolivarian Constitution, translated in several indigenous languages, enshrines a chapter to the rights of indigenous peoples, where we acknowledge their existence, their social organization, their political and economic organization, their cultures, their customs and traditions, their traditional medicine, their languages and religions, as well as their habitat and their ancestral rights to the lands which they occupy by tradition and which are necessary to develop and guarantee their lifestyles. It also acknowledges the right to the collective property of their lands or collective ownership of their lands and establishes that its demarcation will take place with the direct participation of indigenous peoples. It also enshrines the right to indigenous political participation and representation in elections, both at the national, state, and parochial level. And it also respects the legal standards of the indigenous communities and their right to be tried according to ancestral standards. The exercise of the cultural rights and the identity of indigenous peoples and communities are also protected by the law on indigenous communities and peoples and by other laws, special laws such as the law on indigenous languages, which regulates and promotes the use, revitalization, preservation, defense, and promotion of all existing indigenous languages in our country, and which classifies these indigenous languages as being part of our cultural heritage of the indigenous peoples and communities of the nation and of humankind. The Law on the Cultural Heritage of Indigenous Peoples and Communities recognizes and guarantees the collective ancestral rights and everything that has to do with the cultural heritage of indigenous peoples and communities, which is made up of their ancestral knowledge, their artistic creations, their technology and scientific innovations, their spirituality, among others. The Law on Indigenous Artisans, which protects and recognizes indigenous artisans as being the creators of objects of cultural expression and promotes their productive activities. Likewise, it recognizes the importance of incorporating indigenous artisanal activity in the country's economy in order to guarantee the well-being, the cultural identity, and the sustainable development of indigenous peoples and communities, and their incorporation into the social development of the state. The branch of bilingual intercultural education of the Ministry of Education has been in charge of designing and drawing up plans, programs, and educational programs which are bilingual and intercultural in nature in all of the components of the Bolivarian educational system in compliance with the education law. The Mission Guaycapuro Presidential Commission, established by the National Executive, has made it possible to see to the most pressing problems faced by indigenous peoples through the coordination, promotion, and consultation in all plans and projects which guarantee the restoration of the rights of these peoples in the area of health, education, nutrition, housing, sustainable development, political participation, strengthening community administration, and also fostering the process of demarcation of lands and indigenous habitats. In the area of health, with the establishment of the indigenous health branch within the Ministry of Health, we have established a national health and social development policy with an intercultural approach in consultation with indigenous communities and peoples. And thanks to this, we have enhanced medical care for indigenous communities through the implementation of special health plans and the building of traditional medicine and alternative therapy centers. These are called shamanic healing centers, among others. And lastly, the special defender for the protection of the rights of indigenous peoples at the national level has also promoted the strengthening of the cultural identity of indigenous peoples, as well as the protection, defense, and enforcement of their rights and guarantees. These and other actions will continue to be implemented by the Bolivarian government with a view to bringing about change and to promoting development with culture and identity for our indigenous peoples. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias a usted. Ahora daremos paso.
Thank you, and now I will give the floor to the permanent representative of Peru to the United Nations, Mr. Gonzalo Gutierrez. You have the floor, sir.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Sir, like those who have spoken before me, allow me to congratulate you for your election as a chairman of this very important forum. It's important that a representative from Latin America be at the helm of our work. Mr. Chairman, Peru believes that development is an important means of providing wealth and well-being to all of its population. However, we're also aware of the fact that development is not enough to preserve the essence that characterizes us as a country. If we don't take into account the culture and identity of all of its peoples, and that is why it's important to properly balance all of these elements, and this is an ongoing challenge. And it is for this reason that the main theme of this session of the Permanent Forum, Indigenous Peoples, Development with Culture and Identity, Articles 3 and 32 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We believe this is very fitting, not only from the point of view of Indigenous Peoples, but also for every country as a whole. Peru is committed to incorporating all of its population in its national development, respecting the different cultural characteristics and all of the specific identities. Indigenous peoples are not an exception. On the contrary, they are part of our culture and identity as a country. Their contribution enriches us as a nation and helps us to bring together all of our population around an idea and an objective of common well-being. Respect for the prospects of indigenous peoples benefits their development and also benefits the development of the country. And that is why it's important that indigenous peoples contribute to progress in their communities and to the nation. And they are extremely valuable due to their knowledge in terms of environmental management and care, their lifestyle and their well-being. And the Peruvian state is familiar with the need to ensure participation channels so that the indigenous voices can be heard and maintains its commitment to constantly improve these channels of communication in line with Article 32 of the Declaration. The Peruvian state is very familiar with the situation of poverty and exclusion that indigenous peoples experience in the country, and we know that what we need are a set of measures to guarantee that they have access to education, health, and employment, and equal opportunity. In this respect, we have institutional and legislative mechanisms which are designed to implement programs of a national scope for the comprehensive development of Andean, Amazonic, and Afro-Peruvian peoples. The Peruvian commitment is based on the promotion and defense of the fundamental rights and freedoms of indigenous peoples, in accordance with international commitments, and in particular with international human rights covenants, with ILO Convention 169, and with United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, whose development was led by Peru for a period of 11 years without interruption. The inclusive process that Peru feels is important to carry out affects one of the many areas of social life, in which includes not only generation of material wealth, but also cultural, political development and environmental sustainability. And all of this within a context of democracy, human rights, and social justice, and respect for the human rights of all Peruvians. Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, in June of last year, in Peru, there were violent events in the province of Bagua, which claimed the lives of 33 people, 23 policemen, and 10 civilians. Among the actions that were taken after this incident, Peru invited the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples to visit the country. During his visit from the 17th to the 19th of June, the Rapporteur began an open dialogue with all of the people involved and also to collect reliable information on what happened. Among his conclusions, he makes conclusions which disproves the accusations which the Peruvian government was subject to, ruling out any act of genocide or forced disappearances or killing. In order to deal with that situation, the government of Peru began a series of dialogues with the indigenous peoples before the events of Bagua as well as after. The government's desire for dialogue was always present. With this in mind, a group was created, the National Group for Coordination for the Development of Amazonic Peoples, made up of representatives of the government, regional powers, and individual indigenous representatives to reach sustainable agreements with respect to that area. Within this group, we also established the special committee to analyze and investigate the Bagua events. Furthermore, the Peruvian state repealed two legislative decrees, which were at the heart of the debate with the indigenous peoples. In the Congress of the Republic as well, there is a bill submitted by the People's Defender to regulate the right to consultation for indigenous peoples in accordance with ILO Convention 169. This special committee to analyze and investigate the Bagua events in the month of December delivered a report where they identified the causes and developments that led to the crisis of April 5th and also formulated a set of recommendations, among which we should point out that of carrying out an objective and effective investigation by the corresponding authorities, and that is the judicial authorities. These judicial processes and investigations to identify those responsible for the events as well as those responsible for the deaths of the 23 policemen and others, this investigation is already underway. On the 15th of April, barely 10 days ago, or 5 days ago, two members of the special committee who did not agree with the final report published their minority report. We have taken note of this report, and it will also be evaluated by the corresponding state authorities. Today, Peru is more aware than ever of the importance of coordinating their development actions with indigenous peoples, especially those that affect their lands and other resources, and communication is a vital factor among all of these stakeholders. It's also crucial that we have mutual respect within a constitutional order and rule of law. Mr. Chairman, the Peruvian state has reiterated on many opportunities and reiterates here its firm commitment to democracy, to promotion, and to the protection of human rights, and its ongoing desire for dialogue to find effective and permanent solutions to the basic problems faced by indigenous peoples and to prevent a recurrence of events such as those of Bagua. In this dialogue, the Peruvian government also hopes to receive from representatives of indigenous peoples the same will to find consensual alternatives. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank you, sir. And now we give the floor to Bolivia, to Mr. Felix Cardenas, the Deputy Minister of Decolonization. Mr. Cardenas, you have the floor.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to congratulate you for chairing this session of the Permanent Forum for Indigenous Issues. The current model of development, which was inspired by industrialized and capitalist countries, have broken our harmony with Mother Earth, and they are destroying Mother Earth. Our Mother Earth is being overexploited in an unsustainable fashion, and climate change is one of the expressions of this attack against nature. the review of Articles 3 and 32 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples on a Development with Culture and Identity must acknowledge the paradigms of Indigenous peoples on the basis of respect and recognition of Mother Earth. Bolivia presented a report on this matter on development with culture and identity. But what we said, that within the framework of the achievements of the Global Summit for Peoples and Climate Change, which will take place in Bolivia from the 20th to the 22nd of April, we invited governments and organizations to think of ourselves or to imagine the society in the year 2092, because if we talk about the future, we have to look at the present. And it's within this framework of imagining what this future will be, we plan to send two letters to our children in the year 2092. One letter, which involves measuring our responsibility for not having done anything with respect to climate change, and the other letter, which would be the result of our firm defense of Mother Earth. The first letter is entitled, "Forgive me for not having fought." Now, today is the 20th of April. This letter is being sent to you, citizens of the year 2092, to you who are our children and the children of our children. We'd like to ask you for forgiveness. Forgive us for what you are suffering. We know that in the world you live in, there are no trees, there's no water. We know that everything is a desert, that you live in a destroyed planet, and we are the ones who are guilty. There's only one explanation for the terror and the anguish which is taking place now. We were afraid to fight. We let capitalism abuse all of us. Our Pachamama warned us. Our Pachamama begged us to protect her, to take care of her. And there were many warnings, tornadoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, cyclones, eruptions, but we didn't pay attention to this. We thought that they were natural disasters, but that was not the case. All of these calamities were the product of man, and there was one person who was responsible for this crime, and we were accomplices for not doing anything. Today, in the year 2092, there are no forests, no animals, no birds, nothing. Only a couple of museums, which exhibit dried trees as a vestige of our lack of responsibility. The capitalism has destroyed water and oceans, and capitalism's hunger killed our world, and we did nothing. We did nothing, and hope killed us. As a result of our fear, your children are not familiar what animals are like. You don't know what trees are like. You don't know how water tastes. And we can tell you what it's like, but you won't believe us because you haven't seen it. As a result of our fear, your children will be born deformed, with only one eye, sometimes three eyes, some without hands and with three hands. This is the effect of pollution. It's the effect of climate change. We didn't have the courage to tackle the causes of this global deprivation. Now you are suffering because of us. We can only say to you with shame, please forgive us for not having fought. Or we can send another letter, this letter to our children, which is entitled, "Take Care of It with Love." Today is the 20th of April, 2010. This letter will be sent to you, citizens of the year 2092, to you who are our children, the children of our children. I imagine that on the 21st of April, 2092, you'll be celebrating yet another anniversary of our victory against capitalism. I imagine the children running through the forests, taking advantage of a landscape full of trees and birds that sing. I imagine that the rivers where you live are being enjoyed by you. I imagine that boys and girls are laughing in the streets with many gardens, many beautiful things. But you have to know that what you have now is not easy and cost a great deal. It was difficult to understand why rivers were drying up, why glaciers were melting. It was hard to see why forests were disappearing and why birds and animals were disappearing. Everything was gradually dying of thirst and hunger. But we also saw that there were some who had a great deal, who had everything. And we understood that these few people paid for armies to invade countries. They manufactured bombs to destroy those who didn't agree with them. They manufactured death. They were the warlords. They supplied themselves with oil. They ate gold. They lived luxurious lives. And to do so, they invented plastic, toxic substances, and nuclear energy. And they were doing this with capital. And the capital was impoverishing our land. And so we say to all of them, the one that's responsible for this is capitalism. After having understood anything, we began to organize ourselves on the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of April 2010 in a beautiful city, Cochabamba, where you can breathe fresh air and where you can enjoy nature. And the organizations from around the world met there. There were presidents, men and women, boys and girls. Everyone came. And it's here where we established this great covenant to defend Mother Earth, to defend nature, a great covenant to fight against capitalism. And we organized women from around the world. We organized young people, boys and girls. We organized in Asia, Europe, the United States, in all of the continents we came together. There was so much organization that everything was an organization. And even animals organized themselves. Cats no longer ran after mice. There were armies of cats led by mice. Everyone came together. And the trout did not eat the smaller fish. Everyone came together. Birds came together. Animals came together. And birds were flying and shot down more planes. The trees became mobilized and destroyed the feet of their predators. Rivers became organized and flooded factories. Turtles, ants all came together, all organized. In Africa, the Tutsis and Hutus no longer fought among themselves and joined together to fight against capitalism. The Mobutus and the Kabilas stopped fighting each other and they joined forces to fight capitalism. The Palestinians no longer fought against Israelis and fought against capitalism. And in many places, we saw the children of the rainbow to lead this phenomenal battle. And only in this way, with understanding, with organization and unity, did we manage to defeat capitalism. It wasn't easy. It was very painful. It cost us a great deal of love. But we'd like to thank you for having been our inspiration. What father, what mother doesn't want the best for his children? And that's why we did this, and that's why we fought. Today, that you take advantage of this greenery, now that you have clean water and have a blue sky for all, don't forget that this cost a great deal. It was difficult to understand that we were playing with your lives, the lives of your children. We were playing with the lives of the children of our children. It cost us a great deal of pain and love. And now we must tell you that the best way to remember us and to pay a tribute to us for having saved this world is to protect Pachamama, is to protect life and peace in our world. We'd like to ask you one more thing. We ask you that you never forget that you have to respect a mother, you have to take care of her, you have to defend her. Our Mother Earth is all that we have. We only ask you, take care of her. Take care of her with love. These are the two alternative letters that we have. If we opt for the second one, this would mean organizing ourselves and fight for the defense of Mother Earth. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias. Damos paso.
Thank you very much. We will now give the floor to Gabriela Cardusa of Mexico. Madame Cardusa. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is the first time that my delegation is taking the floor, and therefore we would like to join the others in congratulating you, Mr. Carlos Mamani, for your election as chairman of this ninth session. And we also congratulate the other members of the Bureau. We'd like to take advantage of this opportunity to extend a warm welcome to all of the experts of the Permanent Forum. With respect to development with culture and identity, the indigenous peoples of Mexico have their rights enshrined in our Constitution, and in particular, the rights which are established in Article 2, the right to free determination and autonomy, the right to recognition as an indigenous people and community, the right to self-registration or self-identification, the right to the application of their own legal systems, a right to the preservation of their cultural identity, a right to the land, a right to consultation and participation, a right to full access of state jurisdiction, and finally, the right to development, bearing in mind cultural diversity. The challenge that we are facing today in Mexico is harmonizing federal and local laws, as well as making sure that these rights are fully applicable in the daily lives of its recipients. For example, the right to consultation does exist in Mexico, and it is practiced in our country, but its implementation can be perfected. And therefore, in my country's Congress, a discussion is underway on an initiative which is part of the National Consultation System Law, which would enhance the indigenous people's right to participation in adopting decisions taken by the different government levels. We hope that very soon, under this law, the indigenous peoples of my country will have a better way of contributing to strengthening their development with culture and identity. Given the important role that parliaments play in developing laws which enshrine the rights of indigenous peoples and its incorporation in the different legal systems through a process of harmonization, the Mexican delegation is pleased that the Interparliamentary Union is holding a parallel event to this forum, which my delegation is co-sponsoring. This is an excellent opportunity, which we should all take advantage of, to more actively involve our parliaments in the promotion of the rights of indigenous peoples at a national level. As my delegation has said on other occasions in this forum, in Mexico, the Consultative Council of the National Commission for the Development of Indigenous Peoples, the CDI, made up of 140 representatives of the 62 indigenous peoples of Mexico, analyzes, comments on, and makes specific proposals on government actions, programs, and policies, for the development of indigenous peoples. And its results are contained in the Ekbalam document, and this has been incorporated in the Program for the Development of Indigenous Peoples 2009 to 2012. This program is already being implemented, and as it progresses, it will implement the decisions that the indigenous peoples of Mexico agreed to in the document Ekbalam. The Mexican delegation for this ninth session is also joined by Mr. Guillermo Rosendo Martinez, an Amusco from the state of Guerrero, a member of the Advisory Council, which I referred to, and who will take to this council the thoughts and recommendations of the experts of this very important international forum. Mr. Chairman, we believe that the special topic for this ninth forum, Indigenous Peoples, Development with Culture and Identity, we believe this topic is particularly important and relevant, and we will be awaiting its recommendations. In Mexico, development with identity is the main thrust of public policies for indigenous peoples. And this is based on four strategic objectives: promoting the sustainable human development of peoples and communities, enhancing the use of consultation as an instrument to define government programs and actions, harmonizing the legal framework with a view to the full applicability of the rights of indigenous peoples, and strengthening pluricultural dialogue, which is respectful of cultures and traditions. In order to implement this development with identity model, the CDI has been establishing partnerships with other federal government departments, with local governments, and also with social organizations, so that we can combine our efforts and resources for this purpose. The objective of this approach is based on the fact that indigenous peoples should establish their own development models, and they would have an impact on the implementation of public policies for their own benefit. What the government would like to set off is a change in programs and policies such that they would be directed towards comprehensive and transsectoral development with a territorial approach where planning would be done in a participatory fashion from bottom to top, abandoning paternalism and assistance to give way to shared responsibility, to self-management, and to consensual territorial systems. In other words, it's a matter of ensuring that public policies in indigenous matters in these areas, the culture will not be seen as an obstacle, but rather will become the main asset of the model. Thank you very much.
A usted. Tenemos todavía una lista.
We still have a very long list of speakers, but unfortunately we don't have very much time, and so I would ask the next speakers to be very brief, because we won't be able to complete our list of speakers. The next speaker is Mr. Sanher Dasparagi from the Permanent Mission of Nepal. Mr. Bairagi, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, distinguished representatives of indigenous peoples, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the delegation of Nepal, I would like to congratulate you on your assumption of the chair of the 9th session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. The adoption of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous People was a landmark event in the direction towards promoting and protecting the rights of indigenous peoples globally. The United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues has an important advisory role to play in this regard. The reports, resolutions, and recommendations of the Permanent Forum and other UN bodies dealing with indigenous issues have proved instrumental in raising global awareness about the need to protect the rights and promote the development of ethnic and indigenous communities worldwide. The Declaration of the United Nations Second International Decade of the World's Indigenous People from 2005 to 2015 exhibits the importance of the international community attaches to this issue. Mr. Chairman, Nepal is a country of great diversity. There are more than 100 ethnic groups speaking more than 92 different languages. Among them, a large number of groups have been recognized as indigenous nationalities. The government of Nepal has taken several significant measures towards promoting the rights of the indigenous peoples. Nepal has ratified the International Labour Organization ILO Convention No. 169 in August 2007. The government of Nepal is in the process of formulating a comprehensive action plan for the implementation of the convention. Nepal is also committed to implementing the provisions of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The government has instituted several administrative and legal measures with a view to ensuring the representation of indigenous people in all state machineries, including the reservation of indigenous peoples in government bureaucracy police and national army. In light with his commitment to indigenous issues, the government of Nepal invited Professor James Anaya, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous people, for a visit to Nepal in November 2008. One of the main themes of Nepal's interim development plan is inclusive development. This involves targeted programs for indigenous peoples. One of its objectives is to promote economic and cultural development of indigenous peoples by increasing their access to administrative, social, and economic resources. The government has recently introduced a social security scheme for the indigenous people who have been identified as endangered groups. Special programs have been developed within the overall framework of socio-economic development that aim at uplifting and empowering traditionally marginalized groups, indigenous people, oppressed Dalit and other communities. Under the inclusive and broad-based development process that Nepal has embraced, various ethnic groups and communities, including indigenous peoples, are taking active participation in the formulation and execution of plans and programs that affect them. In this context, we would like to underscore the important role that various communities, including indigenous peoples, have been playing in the conservation of their natural environment and resources. Nepal's highly successful community forestry programs owe its success to the deep participation of various ethnic and indigenous people in the management of forest and forest-based resources. There is a great scope for further utilizing their creative potentials and skills in this field. The government has adopted policies and programs for social justice and affirmative action for women, Dalits, indigenous groups, and other marginalized or disadvantaged groups. National Foundation for Development of Indigenous Nationalities is also implementing several projects for socio-economic development of marginalized indigenous peoples. Mr. Chairman, the interim constitution of Nepal defines Nepal as a multi-ethnic, multilingual, and multi-religious country. The constitution recognizes all languages spoken in Nepal as mother tongue, which are also a national language, which can be used in the local bodies. The interim constitution of Nepal guarantees the civil liberties and fundamental freedoms to all people, including the indigenous people. The election to the Constituent Assembly was held successfully in 2008 April. The new political landscape in Nepal has created new opportunities for inclusive governance. The interim constitution has guaranteed to the indigenous tribes, among others, the right to social justice, under which they have the right to participate in the state mechanism on the basis of proportional inclusive principles. Nepal's Constituent Assembly today stands as one of the most inclusive assemblies in the world, with a greater representation of people from various ethnic and geographic regions. It is hoped that the new constitution, which is in the making, will further consolidate the gains achieved so far. Mr. Chairman, the government of Nepal is committed to safeguarding the interests of various ethnic groups and indigenous peoples. We fully reiterate our commitment to protecting and promoting human rights and fundamental freedoms of all people, including that of ethnic and indigenous people. My delegation stresses on the urgent need for the concerted and coherent efforts for speeding up social and political inclusion of the indigenous peoples and promoting their education, health, employment all over the world. I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you very much, sir. The next speaker on my list is Mr. Roman Kashayev from the Russian Federation. Sir, you have the floor. And I will remind you once again that we don't have very much time left.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The Russian Federation welcomes the deliberations of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, as well as the special theme for the year, Development with Culture and Identity. Throughout the past 2 years, the Russian authorities have been carrying out a very wide standard-making work in providing for the rights of indigenous peoples, including within the framework of the topic we're discussing today. In 2009, for example, the concept of sustainable development for small tribes of North Siberia and the Far East of Russia was adopted, and the concept very clearly sets the standards of national policies on providing for the rights of the indigenous peoples. This standard was developed on the basis of analysis of the current situation when it comes to the use of natural resources, education, healthcare, ethnic, cultural, demographic development of the indigenous peoples of the Russian Federation. The concept provides for not only direct state support for the small indigenous peoples, but also helping them in the mobilizing, creating the necessary conditions and incentives for creating the internal conditions necessary for sustainable development whilst retaining their culture and identity. The underlying factor of the concept are the principles which determine the sustainable development of small indigenous peoples, and this provides for their rights and freedoms under constitution and international law, forbidding all kinds of discrimination against them, acknowledging their right to use their mother tongue, the need to comprehensively address the issue of socioeconomic, ethnical, and cultural development of such people, acknowledging their right to priority access to the natural resources they've been using historically. Together with the research and expert entities, and also with the participation of industrial entities, we worked out and approved the approximate methodology of how to calculate the damage incurred as a result of the economic activities to all kinds of legal and physical entities in those areas where indigenous people traditionally live and carry out economic activity. And the important principle underlying this methodology is the principle of social corporate responsibility. One of the topical issues underlying the topic of providing for the rights of indigenous peoples is still the problem of providing priority access to renewable natural resources, fisheries, and also hunting grounds. At present, we are carrying out joint work between the legislative and executive and the civil society on trying to introduce amendments to the relevant laws of the Russian Federation on fisheries, conserving water resources, hunting, and growing and animal husbandry. We also approved the list of traditional habitats and traditional kinds of economic activities and the list of kinds of traditional economic activities of small indigenous peoples. And providing such lists will enable them to fully take use of tax benefits which are provided for this category of people under the law. Now, on the financial instruments of providing state support for them, let me list here the fact that in 2009 the amount of subsidies here was 600 million rubles. Now, these subsidies were provided in order to co-finance activities providing for the social and economic development of the indigenous peoples. And this enabled us to, in a timely manner, take into account their interests and can be, under present conditions, considered as an anti-crisis measure which helps to stabilize the socio-economic situation in the Russian Federation amongst the entities within the Russian Federation, providing for the harmonious coexistence with the indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Now I give the floor to Ms. Charlotta Schleiter of Sweden. You have the floor, madam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, for giving me the floor. And I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate you on your election. Also, let me say that Sweden fully aligns itself with the statement made by the EU representative earlier. My delegation is pleased to participate in this ninth session of the Permanent Forum. We welcome the yearly dialogue with governments and the opportunity it gives to address national-level situations. In Sweden, work is still ongoing on a bill to the Swedish Parliament on a number of issues pertaining to the situation of the Sami people in Sweden. The bill was supposed to be presented in 2010, but was recently postponed to allow for more extensive consultations with Sami representatives. However, on the 1st of January, a new Act on National Minorities and National Minority Languages entered into force, along with a new minority rights strategy. This is of importance and relevance to the Sami people, which is not only an indigenous people, but also recognized as a national minority in Sweden in accordance with Council of Europe Conventions on Minority Rights. The Act contains a new legal obligation for the authorities to protect the national minorities and to promote national minority languages and to promote and protect minority cultures and the possibility for minority children to develop a cultural identity and their minority language. The administrative area for Sami is expanded to an additional 14 municipalities. This gives more people the right to use Sami in their dealings with the authorities and also the right to preschool care and care of the elderly, partly or completely in their own language. Two Sami language centres are to be established in 2010. The Sami Parliament will be in charge of these language centres that are to actively promote and stimulate the use of the Sami language. At the Nordic level, Sweden remains committed to bringing forward the process towards a Nordic Sami Convention to be ratified by Finland, Norway, and Sweden, a text drafted by an expert group consisting of both government and Sami representatives has been in existence for a few years, and the process needs to be finalized. At the coming meeting between the Sami ministers and the Sami presidents in Oslo, 25th of May 2010, the intention is to establish delegations, basis for negotiations, as well as a timetable of topics for negotiation. The Swedish government would like to express its gratitude to the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of indigenous people, Professor James Anaya, for meeting this month with officials of some of the Nordic countries, including Sweden. The visit took place in the Finnish city of Rovaniemi, and in this context, the Special Rapporteur met with, inter alia, Mr. Magnus Kindbom, Secretary of State responsible for matters related to the Sami population in Sweden. Sweden looks forward to continuing its dialogue with the Special Rapporteur. Finally, I would like to reiterate the support of my government for the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The Declaration is one of the steering documents in the ongoing work on the comprehensive bill mentioned earlier. In order to further promote its impact in the Swedish context, the declaration has earlier been translated into Swedish and into Northern Sami language. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Muchas gracias, señora.
Thank you, madam. The next speaker on my list is Mr. Morten Wetland, permanent representative of Norway to the United Nations. Sir, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me at the outset to congratulate you on your election and also to express the gratitude of the Government of Norway to the previous Chair, Ms. Vicky Tauli Korpås, for her excellent stewardship of this body over the past 5 years. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People is a primary source and compass for the human rights of Indigenous people. declaration is of paramount importance as it strengthens knowledge and consciousness about existing rights and thereby strengthens implementation of these rights. Indigenous people's right to self-determination and the right to be consulted in land matters that affect them directly lay down in Article 3 and 32 are central provisions in the Declaration. These two articles address issues related to democracy and governments that may have a positive impact on decision-making processes. To ensure Indigenous people's participation, special consultation procedures are called for when state decisions may affect the particular interests of the Indigenous people. In Norway, the Sametinget, which is the name of the Sami parliament, and the government have agreed on specific procedures as to how consultation between the Sami parliament and the state authorities are to be carried out. As a consequence of the procedures, 20 to 40 formalized consultations take place every year. Our experience is that the many consultations have enabled the Sametinget to become a representative and competent voice for the Sami people and enhanced the awareness and knowledge of Sami issues in the government. Admittedly, agreement is not always reached. However, the consultation mechanism ensures that decision makers are increasingly well acquainted with the views of the Sametinget. A new Mineral Act, that is an act on exploration and extraction of minerals, was adopted by the Norwegian Parliament in the spring of 2009. Consultations with the Sametinget about this new act were carried out in the period from January 2007 to June 2008. Agreement was achieved on several provisions, although the consultations were concluded without full agreement. Another ongoing consultation between Sametinget and the Norwegian government concerns fishing rights in the sea off the coast of Arctic Norway, the Finnmark County. A special study about indigenous fishing rights in the sea, giving case studies from Norway and Australia, prepared for the forum by Mr. Karsten Smith and Mr. Michael Dodson, will be presented here at the forum on Monday, the 26th of April. In line with paragraphs 3 and 32 of the Declaration, the participation of and consultations with Indigenous peoples also underpin Norway's international development cooperation policy. This also applies to the Norwegian government's International Climate and Forest Initiative. We are pleased to announce that the Norwegian Minister of the Environment and International Development will be addressing a special event on this issue at the forum here on Monday, 26th of April. Norway emphasizes the importance of the three UN mechanisms, the Special Rapporteur, the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous People, in strengthening and improving the rights of Indigenous peoples. Over the last few days, the Special Rapporteur, Professor James Anaya, has for the first time made an official visit to the Sami people living across the borders of four countries, Finland, Norway, Russia, and Sweden. The visit was coordinated by the three Sami parliaments in Finland, Sweden, and Norway. We are told this is the first time the Special Rapporteur visits a people and not a people in one country only. In concluding, we would like to underline the importance of dialogue and cooperation between states, authorities, and Indigenous people's representatives regarding both domestic issues and international affairs. In Norway, the Sami Parliament acts on behalf of the Sami people in Norway. Formally, the representatives from the Sami Parliament in Norway are part of the Norwegian delegation to the UN Permanent Forum. However, when representatives of the Sami Parliament address the permanent forum, they speak on behalf of the Sami people of Norway and not on behalf of the government of Norway. It is our hope that the special status indigenous parliaments enjoy in some jurisdictions be reflected in the meetings of the permanent forum. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Thank you very much, sir. And now we will listen to our last speaker for this afternoon, who is Monsignor Kuriako Sebe of the Holy See. Sir, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, being the last speaker, I will be brief. Full version of the text will be distributed. At the outset, my delegation would like to congratulate you, Mr. Chairman, for your election and wishes you every success in your endeavors. The shift of development policies in favor of respect for local cultures, including indigenous cultures, is long overdue. By integrating culture into development policies, there will be undoubtedly more effective results. However, this process is not self-evident. It needs some preliminary clarifications, for instance, which comes first, culture or development? Which must be integrated with which? May cultures follow any developmental model and ethic, or must development integrate the ethic of different cultures? The Holy See considers it fundamental to have a holistic vision of development which entails the well-being of the whole person and of the entire community and emphasizes in particular the dimension of cultural identity. In this line, the objective of development is inextricably linked with the alleviation of poverty and the lifting of living standards of each and every person in a sustainable manner. A human rights-based approach to development that takes into account collective rights and the ethos of benefit sharing that affirms their vital connection to their lands and territories needs to be promoted. In addition to the economic dimension, development must include also social, cultural, and spiritual elements. Their deep sense of religious consciousness, of family, of community cohesiveness, and desire for living in a strong symbiosis with nature must be respected. Any developmental program in an indigenous zone that does not respect these cultural traits can do more harm than good. Mr. Chairman, cultural liberty as a human right of the indigenous peoples and respect for their ethnicity, religion, and language must be ensured. In preserving their cultural heritage, promotion of indigenous languages and intercultural education is critical. In this spirit, the Holy See promotes centers of indigenous languages, oversees compiling of grammar books, and commissions hundreds of translations into those languages often menaced by natural extinction. A wide range of such collections are available for researchers in different pontifical universities and institutes of higher education. Promoting indigenous languages, just to speak of this metropolis, New York City, 25 languages other than English, including many indigenous languages, are being used on a regular basis for regular rites and prayers of the Catholic Church. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, the Holy See is committed to the promotion of cultural development, targeting the human and spiritual enrichment of populations. The leadership of the elders of every community is crucial in this regard and calls for their wise reflection and daring foresight. The formation of the younger generations and comprehensive education in such cultural values also are very important. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias a usted.
Thank you. In accordance with our program of work, a closed meeting will take place tomorrow, Wednesday, the 21st of April. We will have a private meeting among members of the Permanent Forum, and tomorrow afternoon we will look at item 4, which is human rights. A, the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. A follow-up summary report and recommendations of the Permanent Forum mission to the plurinational state of Bolivia. A follow-up summary report and recommendations of the Permanent Forum mission to Paraguay. We will also be joined by the indigenous peoples and the country teams of the United Nations in both countries. So now I would like to give the floor to the Secretariat, who will comment on our work. Thank you, sir.
I was asked to make a few announcements. The first announcement that tonight, in 5 minutes, the reception will be held, the indigenous exhibit and the cultural event with indigenous aboriginal performances, traditional music, and other cultural happenings at the visitors' lobby of the United Nations headquarters. So everybody is welcome. This is organized by DESA, and you're welcome to the reception by our esteemed chairman, Carlos Mamani Kandori. So the second announcement is that the meeting of the African Caucus will happen tomorrow at 2 p.m. in the afternoon in the lobby. The Global Caucus will meet at 8:45 in the morning in room 6 tomorrow. The North American Caucus will meet at 7 in the evening on the 11th floor of the church building tonight. And also a very important announcement. On Thursday, 22 April, in the morning, the Permanent Forum is scheduled to meet in Conference Room 1 in the newly constructed building located on the North Lawn of the United Nations grounds. The capacity of that meeting room is much smaller than the GA Hall, so there will be a certain limit to the number of people allowed to that building. So the following arrangements were put in place and organized by DESA for this event. For Thursday morning, 15 passes will be provided for each of the caucuses: Global, Women's Caucus, Youth Caucus, and seven regional caucuses. One pass will be given to each organization by the Secretariat staff in the General Assembly lobby. Any leftover passes, any extras, if there will be such, will be given on the first-come, first-served basis, also in the General Assembly lobby. It is advised that in the spirit of good faith, if your organization received a pass through the caucus, it would be appreciated that you do not accept additional passes because they will be needed for other representatives. And finally, the good news on Thursday afternoon, most likely the forum will meet here in the General Assembly Hall. But for Thursday morning, we ask you to follow the advice that was just read out. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank the Secretariat. I'd like to tell you once again that tomorrow's meeting will take place in the General Assembly Hall. And furthermore, we would like to thank the interpreters who have joined us for this extension. They usually work until 6 o'clock. And I'd like to thank all of you. The meeting is adjourned.